Accession number 9168, real number 9.
Mr. Amat, real 9.
I'd like to describe the army bell tents that I spoke about previously. These canvas tents were made of heavyweight canvas, very much like a sail of a sailing ship, and they weighed altogether 80 pounds. The ridge pole was split in two halves, about 4 feet in each half, put together with a ring, and there was there's 22 guy ropes, 22 pegs, and a wooden mallet. And it's quite possible for one man to put up one of these tents on his own, although usually two were employed. And these were used right throughout the whole of the First World War, and winter and summer. And although in the winter it wasn't much protection, it was certainly a little bit of protection. Usually there was between 10 and 12 people in one of these tents, and if I remember rightly, the diameter of the tent when it was erected was 14 feet, and everybody who laid down and slept in these had to put their feet to the centre pole. So you can just imagine what it was like sleeping with 10 or 12 soldiers in one of these, although it was usually considered quite a luxury after being in the trenches. Then I'd like to go on and describe my arrival at Calais after I was repatriated from being a prisoner of war.
Before we go to that, did you have any problems with pests?
Yes, oh yes, we were all as lousy as cuckoos, and rats were prevalent right throughout the whole of the trench warfare. There was, there must have been thousands of rats running through the trenches. And of course these terrible things, they ate dead people, as well as any food that was left laying about. What I was going to say was that when I arrived at Calais by train, we were in these tented camps, and we were issued with some more clothes, and we had woolen gloves and scarves and all sorts of luxuries, including cigarettes and chocolate given to us. And we were allowed double rations, which was, you know, after being starved like we were greatly appreciated. And we also were able to shave and make ourselves more presentable than we had to before. And we could see as we looked at each other every day that we were gaining weight and looking much more like human beings. On the 3rd of December, we were taken to the docks and put on board a ship which sailed in about 2 hours. We arrived at Dover. We got off the ship at Dover and got onto lorries, and they took us up a steep hill to the castle at Dover. Here it was taken over by the military and used as a transit camp, and we were documented and given a meal, and then given a pass, 14 days, no, a pass for 2 months actually, for prisoner of war leave, and 14 days pay and 14 days ration money. And we were given a warrant to proceed home. During the time I was prisoner, my family didn't know that I was prisoner at all. It was only a few days before that they realised that I was still alive, because I sent a card from one of the places along the road towards Calais, and that arrived a few days before I got home on leave. Anyway, they were all glad to see me, and we had quite a party. Where are we?
Had your family known where you were all this time?
No. My mother had a letter from the officer commanding my company in March 1918, a couple of days after I was taken prisoner, and in it he said that I was reported missing, believed killed, and but the action was such that it was difficult to appreciate who was alive and who wasn't. And of course, they, after months of not hearing anything, they thought that I'd really been killed, and they made an enlargement photograph of me hanging in the front room. whilst I was on this 2 months leave, I received another letter from the War Office saying that I was to be discharged from the army and given 28 days discharge leave and pay and ration money, which was to be finished about the middle of March. I forget now the date. Anyway, before this time elapsed, I'd gone back to the firm I used to work with, where my father was, and started work there again, making silk cords. My pay at that time was 30 shillings a week, which was quite good in those days. Whilst I was early days back there, I met a girl in the factory, and eventually we got very close, and I used to take her out quite a lot, and we eventually I got engaged to her, but this didn't last long. I left the firm after a few months because I was fed up with being kept indoors after my life in the army. And then one day she said she wanted to break off the relationship, and she gave me back the ring, and I was left high and dry, which was rather worrying for me, because being out of work and also being rejected by the girl was very, really got me down. Anyway, after a bit, I had a friend who was in a similar position. His girl had thrown him over. He joined the army the same as me, and he was a bit older than me. And we formed a relationship and went together all over the place. And then there was another friend who came home from one of the eastern countries who had joined the army, but he was much younger than us. We three used to get together and go out, especially on a Saturday night. We'd go to what was normally called the Fortney Hop. That was used to go to the dances at the town hall in Leighton. But after a bit, I got a job making silk cords again with a cousin of mine in a different factory altogether. But this doesn't last long, because my pal and I went up to New Scotland Yard one day in November 1920, and we went to join the RIC, Royal Irish Constabulary, who were asking for recruits. Anyway, I had a examination, medical and all that, and we both got through, but I was turned down because they phoned through about my records from the army, and being as I had a court martial before, they wouldn't accept me. But I was dead keen on getting away from it all, so I just walked across to the recruiting office of the Army, where they were advertising for recruits to come and learn a trade. And without any to do at all, I passed the examination and got sworn in and told to report next day, ready to be posted back to a unit. The firm I was working for was rather astonished when I got back to get what pay was due to me, and the boss said he'd phone up Scotland Yard and get me to get the whole thing called off, but I was quite prepared to go. Anyway, I got there one morning, and a sergeant from the guards took me in hand, took me to a restaurant, gave me a meal, and then gave me a warrant and conducted me to Waterloo. And from there, I had to go to a place called Wareham in Dorset. I arrived at Wareham about 9 o'clock at night after a journey including two changes of train. And then I had to walk from Wareham station a couple of miles to a place called Warwick Camp, which was just outside the town. When I got there, it was quite dark, of course, at that time of the year it would be, and I was put in a hut with a lot of other youngsters who had just joined, all in civilian clothes. And next morning, when we woke up, we were marched to the cookhouse, given the meal, and then documented and issued with our uniform. In those days, the regular army was completely different to the one I joined as a territorial in the war, and the whole concept of army life was different altogether. The discipline was much stricter, but there was also a family life affair about it. Everybody was sort of friendly. I was put in a hut with a lot of other chaps, and as I got medal ribbons on in my uniform, and I was treated more or less as a father figure, and they all the men gathered around and asked my advice and all sorts of things about the army and all that. And I had my photograph taken several times with these chaps. A lot of them were chaps who'd been sort of crossed in love, or got a girl into trouble, or been in some situation where they wanted to get away from it all. They were quite good families they came from, some of them. I chummed up with two or three of them. We used to go almost every Sunday. We'd go out for a walk in the country and have tea in one of the little cottages along the road towards what is now Bovington Camp. After we got kitted out with all our uniform, by the way, the uniform was all stamped with your regimental number in a sort of a black paint stuff, so that was completely your uniform. No one else could have it, or you couldn't have anybody else's. And the thing about the regular army in those days was, if you were posted to a unit, that was your where you stopped all the time, and it was your home, as it were. And men who were all the same men from the time you started to the time you finished, they're all there. But we were back to the old brass buttons and Blanco and equipment and polishing of all the buckles like we used to in the old 7th Battalion Essex Regiment during the war. Our pay in those days was 14 shillings a week. That's without stoppages, but you usually only got about 10 or 11 shillings. And so I got pally with a chap who was an ex-naval stoker. He was in the next up to me. And as we all liked a drink, the 14 shillings a week with our cigarettes, etc., didn't go far. So we hatched up a scheme of making money. And what we used to do was, as we both seen service and knew how to look after ourselves, and that we used to cut the hair of all the recruits in the two huts and shave them in the morning. One of us used to get the hot water from the cookhouse and a shaving brush and shave one or two of them, while the other one went round with a razor and shaved them and cut their hair sometimes in the afternoon. But we got tumbled on the finish because although we made quite a bit of beer money on this, the sergeant got to know about it and he came in one day and caught us. And, he threatened us with dire if we continued. So we had to pack that up. But we thought of another scheme of making money. We used to take in the washing of all the recruits, and on a couple of afternoons or evenings, if we were on parade in the afternoon, we'd get large baths out, similar to the old bath that mother used to do the washing in, and I'll fill it with hot water and soap and scrub all these clothes, hang them up to dry, and then get an old-fashioned iron and eat it on the stove and iron, and charge the recruits so much for each bundle of washing, and they used to pay up on Friday at payday. At, and we kept that up for some time, really. But
what were the stoppages for that you lost
pay? Barrack damages. For instance, if anybody broke a window, it had to be replaced. Well, this cost money, so you were stopped money. If and any of your crockery in the dining hall, if that was broken, or any damage to any other building or equipment, was all assessed, and each soldier was charged so much. And this was accounted for, and at the end of perhaps a month, you'd get perhaps a little bit of credit, because it had these damages hadn't come to what they assessed they would be. By the way, on this scheme of finance, we were given a clothing allowance. Although we were issued with two uniforms and all the usual underclothes and all that sort of thing, everything else that we had to have to replace any item, you had to pay for, and you were given a clothing allowance. I think it was about amounted to about 5 shillings a week or something like that, 4 or 5 shillings a week. But of course, if you were careful, at the end of 3 or 4 months, when your credit came through, you could draw quite a lot of this, because you hadn't needed to replace any items. We were another thing about this particular this tank corps was the fact that we were given 2 overalls and to wear. These were used when we went down to the garage and done dirty jobs on the cars and the tanks and all that. After a bit, when we first got there and had our uniform, we were told to send our civilian clothes home. And we weren't allowed to go out of the camp at all for 3 months until we'd passed our preliminary drill. Well, we passed through all right, and we got our first pass out of the camp. And I used to go to, with one or two other pals, into the town of Wareham, and we used to go to the Black Bear there's a pub just on the right hand side in the main street, and used to stop there and have a drink and then walk back home. But you had to be very careful because you had to be in by 9:30, and there was regimental police on the road, and if you felt like singing or creating a bit of a noise, you were soon yanked into the guard room. Anyway, we never caused any trouble during the time I was there, and
What did you have to do to pass this first preliminary drill?
Well, you had a rigid foot drill, and this was based on the guard's foot drill, and you all had to pass out by squads, and even if there was only one or two that weren't quite up to it, the squad itself was put back for a further period of training. But we never had any trouble in our squad, and we got through all right and passed out the first time. You had to do foot drills with in those days, the regular army was getting back to peacetime, and all regular army units used to carry a swagger cane. Each regiment had its own particular type of cane. Well, the one in the tank corps was a stick about 2 foot long, 2 foot 6 long, with a black wood and a ferrule at one end, and the other end was a round knob, almost as big as a table tennis ball, in silver coloured anyway, with an embossed tank on it. That was our regimental cane. During the drill movements, we had to use this cane, and it was quite complicated at first, but we all managed to get through it all right. And then you had saluting drill, and you had to pass out in physical training. You had to run a mile, jump so many feet in length, so many inches high, and take part in bayonet fighting with dummy rifle and bayonets used in the gymnastic people, and all that sort of thing. Quite different to the old wartime soldiering. Anyway, we all passed out, and then after we'd been there some time, the whole camp got orders to move, and we took part in loading up lorries with all the gear, and we went to Bovington Camp at Wall, just outside Wall. The station's called Wall in Dorset. This was about 5 or 6 miles away, and I remember during our training, our physical training, we used to run in our shorts and singlets halfway along to this camp, so we knew the road all right. And there was a pub halfway along this road, and it was called the Black Dog. There's several Black Dogs in Dorset. This was one, and we all knew because sometimes we walk along there and have a drink. Anyway, when we got to Bovington Camp, we settled down to a routine life of soldiers in regular army, especially, was governed by orders, which were daily orders. These came out regularly every day, were typed and placed in positions on notice boards in the canteen and outside the guard room and in various other places. And also, they were read out to you by the orderly sergeant in case you missed anything. But first of all, the order used to start with daily orders by Lieutenant Colonel so-and-so or Colonel so-and-so of so-and-so regiment. And then underneath it, they'd start with the daily routine, and there'd be the times for reveille and for breakfast, first parade, letters, dinner. Up the old cookhouse business, and then the parade in the afternoon. Then underneath that there was duties, and at the top of that was the once a week there was a field officer detailed. That was a major or above, or a captain in some cases, and they were detailed for once a week. But the orderly officer, which was the next one under, and the orderly sergeant were daily routine detail. Then there was the orderly corporal. He was the man who used to assemble the sick and march them to the medical centre for to see the medical officer. As I say, all your life was governed by these orders. And then after this routine was what was going to happen that particular day. If there was a route march on, it would say so, and or whatever training was on, what fatigue party was, the names of the people on guard, the names of the all the people on the fatigue and all that. By the way, the guard used to be always formed with one extra man. That's the main guard, the quarter guard. But usually seven men were detailed. There was a sergeant and a corporal or lance corporal and seven men. The idea of the seven men was that you had to get spruced up and you were inspected by the orderly officer on guard mounting parade, or perhaps the RSM. And the smartest man on parade used to be taken off the actual guard mounting, and he was called the stick orderly. And his job was not to mount guard with the others, but he marched away. He was dismissed on the guard mounting parade and he reported to guard commander afterwards without in the ordinary fatigue dress. And his job was to do any errands for the guard or whatever the guard commanded body, but he didn't have to stop in the guard room all night like we didn't do our sentry. So it was quite a sought after position.